Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto hosting from QNF Central over at our friend Dave Shearer's house, getting ready for the 2016 Iditarod. And sitting beside me is the Gypsy Musher himself, QNF. How's it going?
Good, man. As you can see, we got United Nations around here this morning. We got my buddy Jill from France, Dunarac Runners. We've got some brand new collars for the dogs.
Oh, yeah.
We're putting the tags on them right now for Iditarod. Got some friends coming from England that are going to help with organizing some stuff. And, of course, we got Mr. Dave Shearer here. So another day in the life of the Gypsy Musher.
That is right. You know, the Iditarod ceremonial starts tomorrow, as everybody knows that is listening. You're heading out in 70th out of, what is it, 82 or 85 mushers?
Somewhere in there, 84 maybe.
84. So quite a few people. I know that you'll jump up in the standings relatively quickly, as fast as your dogs are, but how do you feel with going out in the later pack of the race there?
It worked out good. To tell you the truth, I wasn't even planning on doing the Iditarod this year. You know, I was going to go back and do the Finnmark slope back in Norway like I did a few years ago. And all of a sudden, I was watching all the people signing up for the Iditarod, and they're all from Norway. And I'm like, well, if they're all coming here, maybe I'll postpone and do that race another year. So that's how I ended up signing up late. But realistically, I'm going out at like 4:30 in the afternoon, which I think it's perfect.
Well, let's get into Iditarod here in just a minute, but you know you want to mention a little bit more about the quest. We had you on about a day or so after the quest, so I imagine you're still a little wasted from the trail. So
I'm sober, I swear.
You were sober, for sure. So you wanted to mention some other things about the quest. I know you have, we're looking at your dogs out here in the window, and a majority of the quest team is on Iditarod, is that right?
Oh, it is the quest team, along with Doc Holliday and another youngster named Earl, after a buddy of mine in Tok, Alaska. So talking with Alan and Allie, and they've got their whole team from the quest, too. I know Brent has a whole bunch of dogs, my buddy Turi. So, you know, it's pretty phenomenal. I was discussing with Dr. Mike Davis yesterday, who studies long-distance sled dogs, about what we have proven year after year and why I'm blown away that there are not more Iditarod mushers doing the quest, that the more dogs race and learn and the experience that they gain, it makes them a better animal. And so I'm a big believer, and it's my personal mission to prove that older dogs are the best style of dogs to race.
So for just the casual fans, they think 1,000 miles just a couple of weeks apart for the dogs is an extreme. But how fast do you think that these guys recover? I'm looking at them right now. They all seem to be pretty chipper. All of them look like good weight. It doesn't take much for them to bounce back, does it?
No, they're dialed in big time, like more than I've ever seen in my life, any team of mine. Like Rosie here and Bodie, you know, Rosie's going on 7. She's done like 6,000 or 7,000 milers. You got George and Amigo are 8, and they've done up to 10,000 milers. Even my youngsters, say a dog like Lester, who's 5, he's already done like 5,000 or 6,000 milers. So it's all relative. You know, people want to just 1,000 miles as being long. But, you know, a lot of people who are critiquing dog mushing are sitting on their sofas back in whatever city they live in, and they can barely even walk a mile. So I sort of giggle when people try to judge sled dogs, because I think we're still discovering how amazing they are. And I don't think we've even come I agree with Dallas Seavey. I don't think we've even come close to realizing the potential of these animals. And that's the beauty of mushing. We're continually evolving.
Well, you know, as you finish the quest and head into Iditarod, it takes quite a bit of planning and preparation. You're sitting here bundling up booties as we speak. You have probably a pile of a couple of hundred there.
Got to stay busy.
You got to stay busy. I know even up to the last minute, here we are, about 48 hours from the official start in Willow on Sunday. You still have things to do, don't you?
I plan it that way. That way I think there's a lot less stress You just another day in the life of being a musher. That's why, besides Nicole helping at the kennel, I don't really have handlers. That's okay, I can do that. So I don't really want any help. I want to do everything myself. I'm a big believer that real mushers do everything themselves. They don't have a million people doing all the work for them. Obviously, some guys and ladies, it works good for them that way. But for me, I'm more interested in being a dog man than a champion. And at heart, I really think you have to be that person that is spending the most amount of time with the animals and, you know, picking up that poop, loving them up. They bond with you. It's the George Adler bond, I tell people. Back in the day, folks would visit George Adler, and his dogs would never even look at them. They would always just be staring at George because he was them. He was their mirror. And that's what I think all mushers should look at their teams as, looking at themselves.
Well, you know, you said you want to be a dog man and not a champion, but you are the champion twice now of the Quest. You know, we talked a little bit going into, right after the Yukon Quest, about sort of the difficulties of going from one race to the other, and you said that the Quest has kicked your butt for many years. Can you explain that a little bit? I know we've talked about it before, but what does that mean when you say the Quest, the Coast, the Coast has kicked your butt over the last several years. What exactly does that mean?
I don't know if it has a little bit to do with just doing both races every year, the wear and tear on my body, or the wind, obviously. A lot of folks have always told me, why don't you just do the Iditarod? And I just tell them, because I can't. I have to do both races. I would feel like half a musher just to do one race every year. So it might not be beneficial to do all this racing year after year after year, but for me, it's who I am and it's what we're about. So I was telling people last night being interviewed that's the focus this year is not racing, but getting to the Coast with a team that's ready to race. And a lot of that's just run-rest schedule. It's being willing to camp out there in weather that might not be the greatest where you'd rather be in a cabin. But, you know, people like Allie and Dallas and others have proven that you got to go by the dog schedule and not your comfort zone.
So, you know, they often say that the Iditarod is a race of thirds. You know, the first third is there to about the burn, then the middle part, and then the last part on the Coast. Do you have a part that you feel you're a little bit more dialed in than the other? I'm sure the dogs are really rocking and rolling that first third.
Yeah, but this year, you know, it's a little sketchy. You live around here, and the trails are pretty much non-existent. So it's going to be a little dicey out there in the river. No way to really set a hook or anything. So I'll have some older dogs up there in the lead. I'm going to try to weigh down my sled a little bit and take it nice and easy. I learn a lot by watching my buddy John Baker from Kotzebue every year and see how he does everything the first day of the race. And no reason to be pushing the dogs and stressing them out. With so many teams, though, it's going to be hard to stay away from other mushers, especially being so far in the back. So my goal every year in any race really is to avoid humans. I didn't get into dog mushing to hang out with 80 people on the trail. So when I'm racing, I'm usually just trying to stay in a little bubble and doing our thing. So I think this year I'm really going to try to stay focused on camping out more and staying out of checkpoints.
So, again, for some fan perspective, at 70th place to start, how long do you perceive it taking for you to move up into, a better spot in the field? How long would that take you to work your way down? A day or two or what?
Who knows, really? So many great teams out there and so many young kids that are great. I was talking to a bunch of kids at the Darwin's Theory last night. Ed Steelstra's nephew, these kids have been working with Travis Beals, who's a great musher already. And they're like in their early 20s, and I'm almost 50. And I'm thinking, boy, man, I'm sort of shooting myself up a ladder here trying to race against these young kids with all that energy in theirs. But I think I got a little bit of energy too. So we're going to be pinging off other teams. That's what a lot of us are doing. It's a safety deal going down Dalzell. I guess during the earthquake, it really, Mark Norman, the race marshal yesterday, was saying that earthquake really messed up the bottom of the gorge. So it's going to be interesting to see. So there's like big boulders and ice up in the trees and stuff. Wow. So it'll be interesting to see all that. We all end up within a couple of days, though. We're always the same 10 to 20 teams that end up in a huge pack that's sort of within an hour to 2 hours of each other.
So the ceremonial starts tomorrow at, 10 a.m. Alaska time. They're in downtown Anchorage. Much shorter course than they're used to. It's only 3 miles. I know they ran the Rondi on a lot of that course the last couple of days last week. And boy, there were some iffy head-on passes. Did you see some of those videos?
Not really. I've been busy running around in circles. But yeah. We were almost thinking, I wonder if we're going to have to do that head-on pass and stuff. It's a new world out there, and it's going to be interesting tomorrow. It's going to be fun. I got my buddy Sam Jackson coming from Nafferton, England, and I went and visited him and his Mrs. Last year, and they took me up to Edinburgh, Scotland. So this is a little payback for Sam. He's hoping to hopefully do the Iditarod one day. He not only has dogs, but he also is a professional pigeon racer.
Oh, you said that on the show before.
Yeah. So big guy. He's going to have to lean down a little bit if he wants to do some racing in the future, but a real nice guy. You know, it's all about having fun tomorrow. I'll have the Cat in the Hat on, and I love the, you know, playing with the fans and having a good time. A little bit of a bummer, you know, that it's only 3 miles, but we'll make the best of it.
So I would imagine just about everybody that starts ahead of you, I mean, everybody with the exception of four or five will be done when you start.
Yeah. So, unlike usually on these older ones, I'm usually – you've been my second rider before. Usually we're passing by teams.
Yeah.
So this one, I ain't really passing by anybody. I'm just going to take it easy. And, you know, I'll have Walter, the man up in the lead. Walter's been doing this now for, I don't know, 9 or 10
long
years.
Long time, yeah.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool to still have him as part of the squad. He's the coach, you know. I might be the caretaker, but have you ever seen Walter with these dogs? It's amazing to watch how much they learn from him. Excuse me. But Walter's sister, Annie, is actually the mother of most of these dogs. So it's pretty cool. This might be Walter's last time doing this, but you never know. He's ageless, it seems like. You know, he's 11 years old now. I ain't going to try to make what I did last year and try to put him in the team, though. I've already got a great team, and it's really not fair to him to try to get him to keep up with these younger kids.
So starting on Sunday, 2 o'clock will be the official start there in Willow. Last year it was in Fairbanks. And living up in Willow myself, I've been out on those trails for the last few weeks, even on the other side, the side that you're going to start. Man, all I can say is it's ice.
Yeah. They're saying in the middle.
So what do you think? How do you feel starting from, without controversy, of course, because I know you guys can get in trouble for that now. But what do you think starting in Willow? Are you okay with that? How do you feel about, I know you're ready to go no matter what the trail is.
Yeah, and I was telling my buddy Andy Angstman from Bethel, his dad's the guy who runs the show there, the Cusco 300 and the Bogus Creek every year, and a lot of great races there. That race was a huge benefit, I believe, to Brent and myself this year, and Pete Kaiser won it, and a whole bunch of great mushers, but Jeff was there, of course. That race had no ice on it, so I think the dogs really got more dialed in for the Quest just after being through such tough conditions. So I think these guys are used to it by now, is what I'm trying to say.
So without talking about Iditarod per se, but, you know, I've been here – this is my 5th Iditarod start, watching you guys. How do you think that climate change is affecting us now? This is the worst winter I have seen since I moved here in 2010. What have you seen over the years, and do you think it's getting worse? Or what do you think about climate change in the terms of mushing?
It's pretty obvious what's going on. I mean, I moved to Tok for a reason. It's the coldest place. It used to be in Alaska, but even in Tok, we've already seen 50s. I mean, last week they had people with pictures of rainbows in February
right.
in Alaska. It's
right.
unheard of at this time of year. So it is what it is. You know, you gotta live life to the fullest every year because you just don't know how much longer this is going to be going on for, to tell you the truth. And, you know, my friends joke about a race from Fairbanks to Kotzebue. That could be the future. But hands off to all the people running the show. You can imagine the stress they're under. They had to, you know, haul in the snow by train from Fairbanks. So it's pretty neat in a strange way to see humans adapt to it and to watch the dogs adapt to it, too. You never would have thought that we would be doing a race that could average temperatures like in the 30s or 40s. But the dogs actually adapt to it. You just got to slow down, learn what foods to feed. Typically, fish, soaked kibble, not as much fat earlier in the race because of the high temps. Save that for later on. But that being said, it's like this every year. And who knows, in 3 or 4 days, it could be 10, 20 below zero. You never know. I mean, it was 50 below in Hooskalit last year.
Yeah.
We all remember that. I nearly froze half my foot, so it was cold.
And it was relatively warm in Fairbanks where you got started, right? About 30 degrees, I think.
I can't remember. I've got a Huzheimer's. You remember?
Huzheimer's.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. So at the meetings, what did they say about the second two-thirds of the trail? I know you had mentioned how it is in the gorge there. How does it look, towards in the interior? Is there snow there? Is it pretty gnarly?
I'm not really supposed to talk too much about these meetings. They're private, but I could just tell you a funny comment was, there's plenty of rocks with a little snow.
All right.
So, but that's just the way it is. I mean, at the coast, it's not necessarily the heat as it is the wind.
The wind, yeah.
And, it is what it is. And we've done this before 2 years ago. But we aren't really going to know until we get out there. And
it can change a lot in a week, too. Yeah, I mean, that's
Plenty of snow in the gorge and the steps in those areas, which is good. It really is about safety of the dogs and humans. Isn't it beauty? We're doing a radio show. We got planks flying across the lake here.
We do, and he has wheels on. He doesn't have the skids or anything.
Yeah, and then we have Walter trotting around. It's got 2 dozen here chowing on bones.
Well, we always talk about the dogs. I know you had mentioned several of them as you were going down. We were talking about Lester there at the end. Who is the black and white one there?
That's Boppy. I named him after a neighbor of mine who unfortunately passed away a couple years ago in Tope, Ted Agree.
And then we have George and Amigo right there.
Yeah. And then you got the main man, Stevie, who's just unreal. You guys are going to see him video on this race. This dog doesn't stop barking at every checkpoint. He's the juice of this, he might say. Named him after Stevie Ray Vaughan, a big hero of mine. Fortunate, I met Laura Wright, the teacher on the trail this year. She came up and introduced herself. And through friends of ours, they have a child who's a little bit sick. We're trying to organize a event after the Iditarod where I can go down and give a talk to their school in Austin, Texas.
Awesome.
Where Stevie Ray was from. Stevie Ray's John Baker Lyons. His father was Sport, one of John's amazing, related to Sutton. I mean, John's just got great lines.
I remember when I was at your house for about a month, when Stevie Ray was just a little teeny pup.
Yeah, you can tell even then.
2 or 3 years ago, I remember him sticking out because he had that very distinct husky look. And you know me, I love that Siberian look.
Yeah, he does.
And he has that Siberian look. So who's next there?
We got Parker, named after a bartender friend of mine from Toke. Then we got a buddy of yours related to many of your babies, Archie. Aussie and Gabby's brother.
Yep.
He's 8. I think he's probably done about 9 or 10,000 milers. Got another young pup right here. That's Earl chowing down on the bone. Then closer to here to the window, we got Bodie. Bodie was so horny going after Cohiba in the quest that he wouldn't even eat. He just couldn't stop staring at her. So unfortunately, I had to drop him. He didn't finish, but he's one of my main leaders. Rosie, even though Stevie and George were my Golden Harness winners, realistically, Rosie, a little bit houndier of a dog, looks like the spitting image of Annie, Walter's sister. She led for most of the quest, and she'll definitely be up and lead a lot for this race, too. Next to Rosie sleeping there is Forrest, and that is Cohiba is Rosie's sister. And so Forrest and Parker and Earl are Cohiba's kids. Their father is actually a dog named Heath. That's from my buddy Brent Sass. And that dog actually goes back to Robert Sorley Lines. If we were in England, if we were in Europe, I would say Robert Sorley. I used to correct European mushers all the time because they'd always say mushing. And I go, no, it's mushing. Then I go over to Europe and everybody says mushing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sometimes I think Americans need to sort of get a bigger picture of the world and think that maybe everything isn't according to the way we think it is.
I see.
We're the pups of the world, the way I look at it.
All right.
And then over, we got Doc Holliday, a James Wheeler dog, for Ronnie Leader, great dog. Havana is Cohiba and Rosie's sister. Havana's brother, Mojito, another one of my leaders. All four of those dogs are leaders. And then Joey is Stevie Ray's brother. So the beauty of this team is it's family. But it's also different styles of dogs. I've got Athabascan dogs here. I've got some Norwegian mix. And of course, I've got a Nupiak mix from up in Kotzebue. So it's a fun team. And the beauty of it is I've got pups coming up that are 10 months old now that are just going to match it perfectly. And they got that Bodhi type of energy. So life is good at Laughing Eyes Kennel.
That is very good. So tomorrow, how many do you guys start with? I know it's typically 12. Is it still 12 or is it down to 8?
No, it's 12.
Okay.
8 dogs for 3 people,
that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Especially when you're hauling a 240-pound English fella. so that's 12. It looks like they've brought in plenty of snow. I think we're going to be leaving right in the heat of the day, so another reason to take it easy. I was even talking to John Baker last night about, you know, in these sprint races, they dunk the dogs a lot. They'll water them down, and especially the hound dogs when it gets warmer. And I mentioned that John, he just sort of gave a giggle like, hey, yeah, I've thought about that too. But it doesn't really work because they dry out so quickly, people would be amazed.
Right.
Just got to keep them hydrated. It's all about, you know, keeping them eating fish, drinking fluids, and not being in a hurry. I'm telling you, that's a big part of this race is just traveling. Because you know how the Iditarod is. It's just very media influenced. I've got a lot of media telling me how to run the race because of what they want to see. And I'm just looking at them like, you know what? You're my biggest concern because you're throwing me off my game plan. So I'm almost to the point where, you know what? I almost feel like muzzling myself just so I can let the dogs do the talking.
That's hard to do, isn't it?
Well, I got the energy, man.
All right, so we're about out of time here. Let's see, we have 5 minutes left or so. Anything else about this race that we want to talk a little bit about what happens afterwards?
Just, you know, folks, I know a lot of people want me to win. I've got a lot of my native buddies that are like brothers to me from Canada, and I was like begging me to win. I just got to explain to them, you know, I'm from Chicago. I'm still learning. I'm going to try to do my best, but hopefully you guys aren't mad at me if we don't win. We just got to go according to the dogs and how they're looking.
You know, it's like sports and anything. Everybody has their favorites. You know, there's been Detroit Lions fans for years, and they want those guys to win every year.
So you compare me to Detroit?
No. But, you know, I think, what is it? Are they the only team that has never gone to the Super Bowl? I think, if I'm not mistaken.
I wouldn't know. So, possibly, yeah.
It's possible. But, you know, everybody has their fans. Everybody roots for everybody. And it's interesting with Iditarod is really you have sort of 85 individual
teams.
And everybody has their own little favorites.
I just like the fans that don't root against mushers. You know, I don't care if you have a favorite,
I hear you.
But love the whole field. Have praise for all the dogs. This negative energy, the squabbling and quibbling about did you hear this or that, that's just disgusting to me. And that's not why I got into mushing. I race for the Alaska people. I'm a total native wannabe. And it's like I told Hobo Jim, he's got a new song called I'm Alaska. And that's the way I look at myself is when I race, I'm racing for Alaska, I'm not just racing for Hugh and trying to be, you know, some great champion or whatever. I'm just racing because I want to be a great Alaskan. And that's the way I look at dog mushing.
Speaking of for Alaska, I know you talked about this on your previous show about the Norwegians and you, and even on this show about you going over there, but they all showed up over here. What is it, 8 Norwegians running this year?
I haven't really.
I believe it's 8.
But, you know, they're all great mushers. And since they're so kind to come over here, a week after the Iditarod, I will be getting on a plane, and my buddy from Sweden, Mats Pedersen, is kind enough to help me get a dog team together, and I'm going to go do a race in Finland, and then I'm going to go up to Svalbard, which is in northern Norway, in an island called Spitsbergen, where they have polar bears. You're actually required by law to carry a gun up there, which I'm sure a lot of Republicans would just love, right, Dave? I'm even though I'm not able to do the Finnmark this year, I'm definitely going to go over there, do some racing. I got to do some, obviously, a lot of stuff in Toke, and then I have to do my school tour. So this is the time of year where my life is just completely nonstop, nomad. And then during the summer, I can chill out a little bit in Toke and play with puppies and do my nightly talks.
And the tourists are in there. So you're leaving to Scandinavia just a week after Iditarod?
Yeah, and then I'm going to be using dogs over there just for fun. I'm not really looking to race that hard, but, you know, I do race.
So then
Nicole's going to have the team, and she's going to be racing in the 440.
In the Kobuk 440.
Yeah, I actually made a speech last night about how John Baker better watch out.
Uh-oh.
So, but no, John's great, and all the folks in Kotzebue are going to help to make sure she's doing okay and line her out a place to stay and all that. So the Iditarod might be huge internationally in the Quest, of course, but for a lot of us mushers, at least the ones that are wise, realize that the best races are in the villages. That's where you get to see the true essence of Alaska. And that's why what John and Kat started up, his missus last night, it's been going on, but they really are, it's called the ACT, and it's about Alaskans growing together as one, and it's all over the internet right now, and I'm a big supporter of it, and it's what the Iditarod should have been doing years ago, and they're, John's, you know, a big motivational native Alaskan
speaker.
Leader.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the man. And so to see what these guys are doing, it's just beautiful to watch, and I'm definitely looking forward to doing as much as we can in the Iditarod to give back to the villages instead of just using the villages and blowing through. That's what the Iditarod's all about. That was Joe Riggington's dream. And so it's cool to see life come full circle finally.
Awesome. Anything else before we go?
Everybody enjoy the show. Have a good time. Don't be staying up 24 hours a day going crazy in the head.
Don't hit refresh a million times a day on the track or you're going to get there.
Yeah, and, yeah. You know, just enjoy the mushing, but also realize that what you're seeing out there, even the guys that are with the film crews out on the trail, we wiser mushers have learned to watch what we say, and we're not going to let all of our secrets out. And half the time, folks don't even know what we're really up to out there. So take it for what it is. Enjoy the dogs, and we'll see you all in Nome.
Awesome. Hugh Neff, 2016 Yukon Quest champion, heading out 70th place in this year's Iditarod, which starts ceremonial tomorrow and then the restart in Willow on Tuesday. You can follow him along on Hugh Neff Gypsy Musher page. We'll make sure we post an update or two there. I guess that's sort of my job.
You are.
Yeah.
Get to work, buddy.
Yeah. We'll do some posts there, and we'll hope to have a show when you get into Nome. We'll get with the fans again. How's that?
Sounds great, dude.
All right. So we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.